Kwana Kavatuvote, Molueni Nonke. Good evening, Huyenant. We are now 11 days into a new year, a brand new 2021. Once again, I wish every one of us the very best for 2021. We enter this new year with a great deal of hope. Type of hope that we trust will restore our nation to good health, that the new year will bring our people relief as well as comfort, and that the lives of our people and their livelihoods will be rebuilt. But if we are to realize our aspirations for this year, we must do a number of things. We must unite to overcome the grave and persistent deepening crisis that our country faces and our people face, which is the coronavirus pandemic. But the pandemic in our country is now at its most devastating. The number of new infections, the number of hospital admissions, and the deaths that continue to take place have become far higher than it has ever been since the first case was recorded in our country in March of 2020. Since New Year's Day, we have recorded nearly 190,000 new coronavirus infections. The country has recorded more than 4,600 COVID-19 deaths so far this year. Since the start of the pandemic, South Africa has recorded a cumulative number of more than 1.2 million COVID cases. We have recorded more than 33,000 deaths and more than 148,000 people have been admitted to our hospitals. As a proportion of the population, the province with the highest average number of cases over the last 7 days is KwaZulu-Natal, followed by the Western Cape, Gauteng, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga. New infections in KwaZulu-Natal and the Western Cape have grown fast and have now far exceeded the peak that we experienced during the first wave. Infections in Gauteng are growing exponentially and are expected to increase much further as more residents of Gauteng who had traveled to many parts of our country return following their festive break. However, we are encouraged that the rate of new infections in the Eastern Cape, while still high, is lower now than they were in the middle of December. In several parts of the country, hospital admissions are also much higher than now than during the first wave. There are currently over 15,000 people with COVID-19 in hospitals nationally, placing a considerable strain on health facilities, personnel, and the equipment. Around a third of the COVID-19 patients in our hospitals are on oxygen. Therefore, there is an intensive focus in our health facilities on increasing oxygen supply and activating filled hospital beds once again. Additional posts that were vacant are being filled once again, and the personal protective equipment stocks are being jointly monitored with the Office of the Health Standards Compliance. Research that has been undertaken by our scientists has shown that the massive increase in infections is largely driven by a variant of the coronavirus known, as we've been told by our scientists, as 501V2. This variant was first identified in South Africa in November of last year. We do know that this new variant of the virus tends to spread much faster than the earlier variants. This explains the fact that many more people have become infected in a far shorter space of time. Emerging information suggests that this new variant does not cause more severe illness than the original variants, but it does put more pressure on the health system because the cases increase so rapidly and the hospitals get full much more quickly. But one of the most important things that we know about the new variant is that we can prevent transmission using exactly the same measures that we've been using to protect ourselves and others along the time that we have experienced this virus. We must remember that this virus is carried through the air. We must therefore avoid what has been described as the three C's: closed spaces, crowded places, and close contact with others. Because the new variant can infect people more easily, it is vital that we each become even more cautious about the places that we go to and the number of people that we interact with. We must not let up on any of the health protocols that we've been talking about since March of last year and the health protocols that we've been observing. If anything, the new variant means that we must be much more diligent and vigilant, more compliant and more consistent in following the necessary health guidelines. Fellow South Africans, despite the severity of the pandemic in our country, we must never see ourselves as being totally helpless. As we have shown over the last 10 months, our actions do have an impact on the direction and the extent of the disease. We have shown that when we are able to work together, we can make a difference. As we begin this new year, let us therefore set out a clear path of working together and of recovery. Let us agree that on those issues that we must do and will do to overcome this pandemic during the course of 2021. Firstly, we must do everything possible to slow the rate of transmission and, as we have done before, to flatten the curve of the infection. Secondly, we will undertake to defeat this virus a massive program of vaccination so that we can achieve immunity across our population and thereby slow the spread of the virus. If we focus on these two overriding tasks, if we act with both urgency as well as purpose, we will be able to prevent more infections. We will be able to save more lives, to rebuild our economy, and ultimately overcome the disease. On the first task, to slow the rate of transmission, We have all the tools that we need that we've been talking about for the past few months. We know what we need to do as individuals, as families, as companies, and as communities. I am greatly encouraged by how people have responded to the call to wear masks whenever we are in public. As we know, this is one of the best ways to prevent transmission of the virus. I wish to thank all South Africans who now wear masks without fail. As I moved around and looked around, I found that many of those people that I met and encountered were wearing masks. And I want to encourage all of us to continue doing just that. Now, more than ever, we must each make a deliberate decision to avoid any unnecessary contact with other people. I would like to take a moment to specifically address the issue of funerals, which have consistently been identified time and time again as so-called super spreader events or super spreader moments. Providing a fitting send-off for a departed loved one is deeply ingrained in all of us. It is part of our culture. There are certain rituals that we perform in line with our respective cultures and traditions, not just at the funeral itself, but also many days before the funeral. But these are all things we simply cannot continue doing. We are in the grip of a deadly pandemic, and all those activities that would normally take place are just increasing our exposure to risk for ourselves and for the bereaved family and for our own families at home. Many people keep repeating and reporting that many of those who are now passing away were infected at funerals. Let us pay heed to this. There will be a time when we can go to the home of the deceased to pay our respects and to sympathize properly with our neighbors, our friends, and our relatives. Funerals have become a death trap for many of our people. But for now, I think it is best to stay safer and to stay at home, unless it is absolutely necessary that you should be at the funeral. On the 28th of December last year, we announced that South Africa was being placed on adjusted level 3 to contain the rapid rise in the infections that we've all become aware of. We also announced that several areas in the Eastern Cape, Western Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Gauteng, Limpopo, and the Northwest were declared as hotspot areas. We have now had an opportunity to review the measures that were put in place as part of the adjusted level 3 in light of the current state of the pandemic. We have also held a number of consultations with religious leaders, community-based organizations, business, labor, and representatives of the provinces and the local government, as well as our traditional leaders and on the impact of the measures. Based on the recommendations of the National Coronavirus Command Council, Cabinet has decided to maintain the country on adjusted level 3. Most of the measures that were announced on the 28th of December 2020 will remain in place. Given the risk of widespread transmission, most indoor and outdoor gatherings will not be permitted. This includes social gatherings, religious gatherings, political events, traditional council meetings and gatherings at sports grounds. As before, this does not include funerals and other limited exceptions as detailed in the regulations, such as going to restaurants, museums, and gyms. Funerals may not be attended by more than 50 people, and there needs to be social distancing, hand washing, and mask wearing at funerals. The hours of curfew will now start at 9 p.m. and end earlier at 5 a.m. It remains compulsory for all of us, every person in our country, to wear a mask in a public space. The sale of alcohol from retail outlets and their on-site consumption of alcohol is still not permitted. Health services in several parts of the country reported that the prohibition of alcohol sales had significantly reduced the number of trauma cases seen in our hospitals over the New Year period. I must mention this one. Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital sent out a post on their Facebook showing a photograph of their trauma ward on New Year's Eve. That trauma ward was empty for the very first time since Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital was established. This goes to show and to prove that alcohol does result in behavior that causes trauma. It is vital that we continue to protect our health services at this crucial time. All beaches, dams, lakes, rivers, public parks, lagoons, and public swimming pools in hot spot areas will be closed to the public. As before, botanical gardens, national parks, and other parks where access control measures and entry limitations are already in place may remain open to the public. One of the challenges that we have as the festive season draws to a close is the huge congestion at many of our land border posts. This has exposed many people to infection as they wait to be processed, and it has been difficult to ensure that the health requirements for entry into South Africa are met, with many people arriving without proof of COVID-19 tests. To reduce congestion and the high risk of transmission, Cabinet has decided that the 20 land ports of entry that are currently open will be closed until the 15th of February for general entry and departure. These include the six busiest border posts, which are Beitbridge, Lebombo, Maseru Bridge, Oshoek, Ficksburg, and Kopfontein. People will, however, still be allowed to enter or depart the country for the following purposes: for the transportation of fuel, cargo, and goods, emergency medical attention for a life-threatening condition, the return of South African nationals or permanent residents or persons with other valid visas, diplomats, the departure of foreign nationals, daily commuters from neighboring countries who attend school in South Africa. These measures we had implemented right at the beginning when we had the earlier lockdown. The full list of exemptions will be contained in the regulations. It is necessary that we keep the alert level 3 measures in place until we have passed the peak of new infections and we are certain that the rate of transmission has fallen enough to allow us to safely ease the current restrictions. And I wish to express my appreciation to the religious leaders of our country and the religious community as a whole. In particular, for the support and the understanding that they have demonstrated throughout this pandemic. Not only have faith-based organizations had to limit or to adjust the nature of worship or their various other activities, they have also provided counseling, they've provided support, they've also taken up quite efficiently feeding schemes and other social services to communities. And we commend them for this. At a time when people need both material and spiritual comfort, it is indeed unfortunate that the restrictions on religious and other gatherings have to remain in place for the moment. Research has identified several risks that arise from religious services and other gatherings. These include the risk associated with enclosed spaces, large groups, close proximity to others, staying for long times in one place, and loud talking as well as singing. We will continue our discussions with our religious leaders on how best to safely meet the desire of many of our people to worship in congregation while working together to preserve life. We have communicated this to our religious leaders and we will be having further discussions with them. As schools and other educational institutions prepare to begin the new academic year, there is understandably concern about whether this is advisable in the midst of a second wave of infections. The National Coronavirus Command Council is dealing with this matter, and we will provide guidance on this matter in the coming days. As the country returns to work after the festive break, it is essential that all places of work ensure that they continue to have safety protocols in place and they must ensure that these are vigorously adhered to. Our second task, as we chart our path to recovery, is to achieve immunity across our population through a massive program of vaccination. The development of several effective vaccines is the most significant and most promising advance since the onset of the global pandemic. We've always said that an effective vaccine will in the end be a game changer against our fight to COVID-19. Vaccines offer to the peoples of the world a means to control the coronavirus pandemic. A person who is vaccinated has a much reduced chance of becoming ill and dying from COVID-19. When enough people are vaccinated, we will reach what is known as herd immunity, or what I prefer to call population immunity. This is when enough of the population is immune to the virus to provide indirect protection to those who aren't immune, bringing the spread of the virus much more under control. While the actual level needed for herd or population immunity is not known, our scientists estimate that we will likely reach this immunity once around 67% of our population is immune. This amounts to around 40 million people in South Africa. We have put in place a comprehensive vaccination strategy to reach all parts of the country, and we continue to work on this strategy, ensuring that it will be effective. This will be the largest and most complex logistical undertaking in our country's history. It will be far more extensive than our HIV treatment program or even our national, provincial, as well as local government elections in terms of the number of people who have to be reached within a set period or space of time. It will require the active involvement of all spheres of government, all sectors of our society, and all citizens and residents of our country. Our strategy has several parts to it. The first part of our strategy is to acquire enough vaccine doses to reach this population or herd immunity. We are in the process of procuring vaccines through three channels. The first one is through the World Health Organization's COVAX facility, which we've spoken about quite often. The second one is the African Union's Vaccine Initiative. And the third one is the direct engagements that we are having with vaccine manufacturers or developers. As I've reported before, South Africa is part of the global vaccine, COVAX facility, in which countries have pooled their resources to support the development of vaccines with a view to ensure that all countries receive an equitable supply of effective vaccines. We will receive vaccine doses for around 10% of our population through the COVAX facility. As the chair of the African Union, we initiated the establishment of an African Vaccine Acquisition Task Team, having developed a clear strategy on vaccines. We realized that what we now needed was to go and acquire the vaccines. These will be purchased in bulk, and African countries will be able to order vaccine doses from the pool that we've created at the African Union level. It is estimated that Africa as a whole will need 1.5 billion doses to immunize the target of 60% of the population of our continent. Through intensive engagement with vaccine manufacturers and developers, the task team has done tremendous work to secure vaccine doses for countries on the continent. As I said before, our own Minister of Health, Dr. Zweline Mkhize, serves on this task team that we established. The South African government has also been engaging directly with several vaccine manufacturers for the past 6 months. Given the massive global demand for vaccines and the vastly greater purchasing power of wealthier countries, we are exploring all avenues to get as many vaccine doses as soon as possible for South Africans. While there are several promising negotiations with a number of different manufacturers that still need to be concluded, we have to date secured 20 million doses to be delivered mainly in the course of the year and substantial amount of it in the first half of the year. We will make further announcement as we conclude our negotiations with these vaccine developers and manufacturers. We are in daily and constant negotiations and contact with all these manufacturers. The second part of our strategy is to identify the priority groups that need to be vaccinated as we receive vaccine doses throughout the year. In phase one, with the first batch of vaccines, we will prioritize around 1.2 million frontline health workers. In phase two, when more vaccines arrive, we will prioritize essential workers such as teachers, the police, municipal workers, and other frontline personnel. We will also prioritize people in institutions such as old age homes, shelters, prisons, people over 60 years of age, and adults with comorbidities. The total number we plan to reach in this phase is around 16 million people. In phase three, with increased supplies of these vaccines, we will then vaccinate the remaining adult population of approximately 22 million people. We will then have reached around 40 million South Africans, which is considered to be appropriate for population immunity. The third part of our strategy is to distribute the vaccines throughout the country and to administer them to those who have been identified to receive them in the various phases that I spoke about. We have established a national coordinating committee, which brings together key government departments, but it also brings together key stakeholders in the body politic of our country, which is business, which is labor, which is community-based organizations, to oversee the implementation of our national strategy. We will administer vaccinations through hospitals, through clinics, outreach services, and other mobile clinics and private settings such as doctors' offices, pharmacies, and workplaces as well. We have had several engagements with stakeholders in recent weeks to ensure a coordinated and an inclusive vaccination campaign. An inclusive partnership has been formed between government, medical aid schemes, and the private sector to support the acquisition, the funding, and distribution of vaccines. We see a vital role for organized labor, traditional leaders, and other religious communities in the dissemination of accurate information on vaccines and in ensuring optimal participation in the vaccine program. We welcome the contributions made by civil society, by our academics and others towards the development of an effective national strategy, even when such contributions have been critical of government. We are integrating the full resources and the capacity of our country into a single effort directed at making vaccines available. This collaboration, which is among the most significant of its kind in our history, is essential as we work to gather in solidarity to win the war against COVID-19. There are still some in our country who are skeptical, and many of them are very vocal about vaccines. And there is much disinformation and conspiracy theories that are being spread around about COVID-19 vaccines. Yet vaccines have been used to eradicate diseases such as smallpox and polio. Our children get vaccinated routinely against many diseases such as mumps, measles, rubella, and travelers are often vaccinated against diseases like yellow fever. I was vaccinated against yellow fever just a few months ago. And many South Africans, in one form, shape, or other, have been vaccinated before. Every vaccine that will be used in our program will have to be approved by the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority, which always applies stringent scientific standards to ensure the safety and efficacy of any drug or treatment that is utilized by the public in our country. South Africa's vaccine strategy is well underway. Understandably, we all want to know when the vaccines will be arriving. Everybody asks that question, and they want the vaccines to arrive yesterday. As we work to secure the supply of sufficient doses in the midst of huge global demand, we are doing and will continue to do everything that's possible to ensure that the process is both transparent and it's handled most effectively and efficiently, and that information is made available to South Africans. I call on all South Africans to be part of the monumental undertaking to roll out the coronavirus vaccine. Although it will be difficult, it will be complex, and it will at times be very frustrating, it is vital that we do this together. For the sake of our country and for the well-being of all the people in our country. Now, as we travel together along the path to overcome the coronavirus pandemic, we must never lose sight of the need to act urgently and decisively to end the violence that men perpetrate against the women and the children of our country. Gender-based violence and femicide is our country's second pandemic. Plans to implement social and behavioral change interventions are taking shape. For example, government has been collaborating with several civil society formations to sensitize a number of stakeholders in our country, for instance, taxi drivers and taxi marshals, on gender awareness, on gender norms, the issue of toxic masculinity and gender-based violence and femicide, in an effort to change the behavior of the men of South Africa. In another example, faith-based organizations have initiated a campaign to sensitize religious leaders on patriarchy, gender-based violence, and the church. This includes a program where leaders are trained to accompany survivors of gender-based violence from the time they report the incident until they are referred for further service. Faith activists are also trained to support women through the various court processes. Efforts are underway to support women's economic empowerment, especially during this COVID-19 period. This includes training for business women to enable them to access public procurement opportunities. To end harassment at work, South Africa is in the process of ratifying the International Labour Organization Convention 190, which establishes a global standard for the protection of women and other vulnerable groups in the world of work. Nearly half a year has passed since I spoke to you about the coronavirus storm that was sweeping across our nation. I said then that the coronavirus storm is far fiercer and much more destructive than any that we have known before. We are now in the center of that storm. We do not know how much longer it will last or how much worse it will get. But we know what we need to do to weather this storm and to survive. We know what we need to do to protect ourselves and to protect those around us. We know also what we need to do as a nation, as well as a continent and as a global community to overcome the pandemic. We need to therefore act with common purpose, understanding that what we each do is important for ourselves, for our families, our communities, and our society. If we work together as we have done over these many months, if we maintain our resolve, we will realize the new year that we all so dearly hope for. We will find the peace as well as the comfort, the relief, and the good health that we all seek. We will also be able to rebuild our lives and our nation. And as I say, may God continue to bless our beautiful country as well as to protect all her people. I thank you.